things you can remember, but my memory is really poor, so.
Oh, Judy, it is.
It is. It is. Billy, you remember a whole lot more than I do.
Oh, God. All right, I'm going to leave you. Well, I'll sit in for a little bit, but Judy, you can find your way back to where you're going.
Yes, to the picnic.
And if you want to get rescued post-Saul, let me know.
Remind me where the... It's Pearson. And remind me where Pearson is.
They'll tell you.
Okay, they will. All right.
We'll follow the crowd.
It's across from Stafford dorm. Stafford... what's the name of Stafford?
She lives Pearson's in Metcalf, so...
It's down on Talbot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's the chemistry building.
Yes.
Yeah.
Behind Metcalf and Kitty Corner.
Next to where the arena was.
Okay, fine. Let me just do this because my freshman roommate's widower and I am supposed to meet for lunch. So let me just put that over there.
Oh, okay.
Just in case he calls.
So we'll see, maybe 20 minutes. Is that?
Oh, sure.
So just for the, thank you.
He wanted to see the photo.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this in a second, but just for the record, could you state your name and the year you graduated from Tufts?
My name is Judy Mears, and I graduated in 1968.
Great. And what's your hometown? Where are you from?
Norwalk, Connecticut.
That's right. Great. Thank you. Because we have a limited time today,
sure.
I just want to zone in on a couple things.
Sure.
And then if we have trajectories or wander afield, that's okay too.
I'm here at your request.
This is the photo that they shared with me from archives.
Yeah.
And could you talk about this, Judy?
I don't remember any of it.
I just remember. This is you here, right?
Yes, that's me. And this is Dick Sykes from my class.
With the glasses there.
Yeah.
Joppy and Harmon.
And Tom Barefoot, he's here today.
He's a tall guy with the glasses behind.
No, he's the one with all the hair.
Oh, okay.
And he runs something now called, I don't know, the National Happiness Project. But anyway, you ought to ask him. And there's Barbara Harmon right there.
Okay. Now, what's going on? What was the occasion?
I don't remember. It was some sit-in at the dean's house, wasn't it, Phil?
Was it civil rights?
No, it was the war. It always was the war.
Okay.
We were so white. You know, there were only two black women in my class, and in my dorm they roomed the one black woman and the only Jew in the dorm together. You know, that was 64. There were only... Saul says that there was no quota on Jewish admissions undergraduate in 64. He said because they were, you know, desperate to get students in. 60% of the applicants got in, but I remember in my dorm, and the two girls, we were girls then, never really got along. That was Marcia Jacobs and Lila Colburn. Anyway, that must have been, it had to be the war. It wasn't civil rights.
Judy, tell Laura what you said to me about the look on your face.
You look embarrassed and ambivalent. I look embarrassed and ambivalent because I was.
I was. You know, I came from a blue-collar background. I was the second person in my family to go to college. I was really conservative politically. I didn't, you know, I still had the belief that maybe the government knew what it should be doing. And yet, these were my friends. These were people whose beliefs I respected, and I wanted to be where the action was, and especially because I was involved with the student newspaper. But I didn't really know what to do. I didn't have authentic feelings like Tom Glenn, that this was the work of the devil. I really didn't have that, but I wanted to be there. So you can see that I'm not really, my body language is, you know, I'm not this way. I'm sort of like, oh, God, what am I doing?
Do you remember how it happened, how people ended up there?
Or? No, I don't. I'm sorry, I don't. That's why my memory is so bad. Tom may remember, and Barbara Harmon and Tom Barefoot, who are here, they may remember. I wish I could get them to talk to you. Barbara is very articulate, and she was a college professor for 30 years. Her memory may be much stronger.
Maybe if I, now that I've talked to you, I can reach out to them.
Yeah.
Do you think they might...
I'm sure they would.
Okay.
Both of them are here today.
What was, can you remember, how would you articulate what the underlying frustration was with the war? How would you describe?
I think it was, partially it was the war, but it was mostly about people who were being drafted, people who were resisting the draft. And after Tufts, I went to law school. Mm. And after law school, I worked for the Connecticut Civil Liberties Union and the ACLU. And when I worked for the Connecticut Civil Liberties Union, I was supervising students who were providing legal services to the prisoners at the federal prison at Danbury. The Berrigans were there then. And a guy named John Bach was there, and he was a draft resister. This is after Tufts, of course, so I evolved. We forget now that there were people who served time in prison for draft resistance. He served 3 years. He was only 19. He spent 3 years of his youth, and he was, you know, at Wesleyan when he refused to register for the draft and refused to sign up to be a conscientious objector because he thought that was a cop-out. So he's still my friend today.
Wow.
And he is the Quaker chaplain at Harvard now, and active with the Quaker community in Cambridge. So, but I didn't know that then. I was still being evolved.
Mm.
I came from a very apolitical family because the goal was you got a job that was dependable and you were respectable and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So my going to college, my being an overachiever, student newspaper in high school, student newspaper here, et cetera, et cetera. So
and yet something must have ignited something in you.
Tufts grew me up, and then a Tufts alum helped me to get into law school because he was the dean of students at the law school, and he was looking for good women to enter in the fall of 68. And why was that? Because they had just eliminated the graduate student deferment from the draft. So more men were going into law school, so they needed more women. They took three times as many women in my law school class that year as had ever been there before. And when we got in the law school, some of the professors called us General Hershey's girls, because General Hershey was the chairman of the draft board, the National Draft Board. Anyway, I was in a volatile period, and I grew up in that period.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
May I ask what your family did, what your father did?
My father never even graduated from high school. My mother was a school teacher, and I have three younger brothers, one of whom never graduated from high school. And none of them went to college. I was the overachiever.
What did your dad do? Was he in the trades? Was he?
He came from a very small and poor farming community in the Delmarva, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia Peninsula, and he grew up in the Depression. There was no money, no jobs. He went into the Civilian Conservation Corps. I have a picture of him there.
Oh.
They turned him into a cook. And so he enlisted in the Navy before the war. So he has one of those medals that, you know, I served before that. He was a cook in the Navy.
Okay.
And then, you know...
Norfolk. There's that, yeah.
And he was released after World War II. My mother tells me I was conceived on VJ Day. My birthday is in a few days, so, you know. Anyway.
We'll go with it, yeah.
Yes, right. So, anyway, he was from Virginia. My mother was the daughter of Italian immigrants in Connecticut, and we lived in Connecticut near her family. But I still have lots of family that I visit all the time down in Delmarva.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Conservative and blue-collar and... I wouldn't even say striving. I got lucky. I worked my ass off.
Striving meaning?
Striving to get... Thank you. Phil knows
you got lucky, meaning getting into Tufts? Or you had a good guidance counselor? Or?
I was lucky in that I was a really good student. My mother was a good mentor and model. My brothers didn't have that kind of good model. My father drank too much. So I got lucky having her as a model. I excelled in school. I was lucky there. Mm-hmm. I got into Tufts with a full scholarship.
Wow.
And I never even saw Tufts before I got here. I was interviewed by a wealthy woman in a nearby community, and she must have said good things about me, and then I got to Tufts. So Tufts really grew me up in so many ways. And then I got lucky with a Tufts alum who got me a full scholarship to the law school.
Wow, University of Chicago.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. Wow. And then, you know, life after that.
Wow. Wow.
So I'm sorry I can't tell you more about that.
That's all right. If I can place it within the war context, and particularly within the draft, I think that really helps.
There's a degree of self-interest here among people. I mean, they could all be drafted, ultimately.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. I'm seeing the young men here.
Yes, yes. Or, you know, girls say yes to men who say no. You remember that slogan from the war? Or maybe, well, I don't know how old you are, but that was part of it, you know?
Women say yes to men who say
no to the draft.
Okay.
It was part of it.
What? Mimi Farina.
Yes,
somebody
indeed. Mm-hmm. Been down so long, it looks like up to me.
I remember that one. Right.
Yes. Sorry.
Do you remember Halliwell?
Oh, yes.
What are your...
He was a good guy. He tried hard. He was a little out of his depth. He had no preparation for this. Who does, you know? It's like the people at the federal prison in Danbury. They were not ready to have the Berrigan brothers as prisoners. They weren't, you know? They had priests. They had the bishop come. They had the congressman come. They had presidential candidates come, all to see the Berrigans. They weren't used to this. They didn't know what to do. And does the name Mitch Snyder mean anything to you?
I don't remember that.
Mitch Snyder was an interstate car thief at Danbury at the time that the Berrigans were there. And they catalyzed his anger at the system because they believed in Jesus's instruction to his disciples, cast down your bucket where you are. So the Berrigans were casting their bucket down about social justice where they were in the prison. And Mitch took that message, and when he got out of Danbury, he went to Washington, D.C., and he ignited the movement to house the homeless in Washington, D.C. Anyway, so it's related.
Right,
and
right.
My friend, who's the Quaker chaplain, was very close with the Berrigan brothers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wow.
And also Gordon Liddy was there just a few years later.
How do you put into words your feelings about the draft?
Now or then?
Yeah, well, I guess thinking how what was the singular unifying?
It was the unfairness of it all, I believe. A couple issues. One was it was unfair because we felt that people who were connected, people who were politically powerful, were always able to angle some exception. I mean, Donald Trump, what did he have? Weak ankles or whatever the hell it was? And George Bush, who's my age, he was in the Texas National Guard or something. He didn't go. He didn't fight. So that was one element. Two, we were fighting what many people considered an unjust war. And three, it was a civil war that we had put our thumbs on, really, on behalf of one side, for issues of our own and not issues necessarily of what was best for the Vietnamese people.
Interesting. Wow. Were you active in, I know you did the newspaper. Oh, talk to me a little bit before, I do have to ask again about the pink paper, because how did you get that idea?
You know, I don't know how I got it. I tell you, my memory is shot. I don't know how I got it, but I must have been thinking about it because Huey, our printer, would have had to order it for me.
Yeah. Who was your printer?
His first name was Huey. Well, Colonial Printing was the name of the company. Let me just... This is Jim. Oh, no, that's something different. Sorry. Hold on. I apologize for this. I just want to put it away. Okay. All right. Colonial Printing, Malden?
Malden.
Yes. And the printer that we worked with was a guy named Huey, H-U-E-Y. Do we know his last name?
Huey.
Right. and you know, he was a hot lead guy. And my tenure as the editor, I was announced, I think, as the editor at the end of my junior year. So it was first semester of my senior year when I was the editor. And then another woman was the editor the second semester of our senior year. And so going down, you know, Huey was larger than life to us. There he was this big blue-collar guy. He's sitting at his linotype machine. Wasn't he smoking at the same time, Phil? Yeah. And we'd bring the stories to him, you know. And
they're typed on.
Yeah.
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 He set the type.
Yes, he did.
Hand.
Yeah.
Or Huey and...
There was another guy who sometimes worked on it, and we'd get big subs, you know, and just be there, you know, with him. And that was exotic, you know?
Wow.
It was really cool, really cool.
Wow. And he's okay with pink paper, or?
Well, he was. You know, he didn't care what the paper.
Why? I know. I'm gonna. It's big. So it's I know fun. Why it's pink. But how would? Why pink? Why? What? Is it? Are you asserting something? But how would you describe what?
I think I was exulting. I had worked hard. I had been named by my peers. This wasn't a faculty appointment. I had served on that paper since I got there, and I like to think I was good at it, and it was a lot of work, so I was really happy, and I wanted to make a little, you know, a thumbprint on history. Here it is. Even if people didn't read it, they'd see it.
Are you making a statement because you're a woman?
Yes. Yes. As a matter of fact, let's see. Where did that go? Here it is. I've saved that too.
Okay, I'm going to read this for the 1893 to 1993, 100 years of coeducation at Tufts.
You can have that one.
No,
I have another.
Well, it's archives. what is this? What's the story with the button?
I don't think I came in 93, although that was an anniversary year for me. I may have come to get the button, because 93 would from 68, is that 25 years? They may have been giving these out at my reunion, and I like the idea of the feminist symbol mm-hmm. with Tufts.
So, it's hard to put this in a few words, but why was that so important to you? I wasn't here, so I don't know the gender culture, but was it tough to be a woman here and to assert and be in a leadership role, or was it more like, I want recognition for my peers and myself?
Well...
Or both, maybe. I don't know.
It wasn't tough to be a woman here because there were lots of good women in my class. I had good friends. Most of the people on the newspaper were men. Most of the professors, not all, but most were men. Maybe it was more about me than it was about... And yet, in that era... What were the women going to do after graduation? There was one woman who was very capable. She went to engineering school. You know, were most of them going to become teachers or OT people? You know, I don't know. It was an achievement. I think I can say it that way. It was an achievement, and I was proud of it, and I had worked hard for it. And it was also an achievement for Tufts.
Mm-hmm. Did you get any comments? Well, you mentioned the ad person was
involved. Oh, yeah, the ad person. Well, you know, he was the guy who had to go around to the vendors and the restaurants and the, you know, the garages and who I forget who advertised. But, you know, they were mostly men he was dealing with and sell them these ads, and he bitched and moaned that, you know, they didn't want it on pink paper.
Now, was the guy a student?
Yes, he was a student.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He still had plenty of ads in there.
He did. I guess he may not have told them it was going to be on pink paper. And maybe he had, you know, deniability, because I didn't tell him in advance. So it was after the fact.
Brian Foy.
Yes, Brian Foy. Anyway.
Any response from the community when it came out? Was there any little riffle of...
I hardly had any contact with the community in those days. I was so insular. I was working hard on the paper and working hard to get a good grade point average and writing to my mother, and, you know, because I never had a car on campus.
Yeah.
And I lived on campus all 4 years.
Yeah.
Mm.
And how did you make good friends? What were the friends that you sought out, or that you...
The most important ones were the ones on the weekly. I've known Phil since 66.
Wow.
There were four of us who formed a real nucleus. The guy who got me on the paper was the guy who lived in the next town to mine, who lived in Westport, Connecticut, Keith Hagel, who had a car. He drove me back and forth on the holidays, and he got me onto the newspaper, or he accepted me immediately when I showed up at the weekly. So my closest, I spent most time with the people on the weekly, and then people in my dorm. I had a roommate freshman year, and I'm waiting to hear from her widower, but the other 3 years I lived in a single. So I saw people in the dining hall, of course, and I saw them in classes, and some good friends. But it's not like, you know, I was a drama major, so I hung out with the drama people, or I was a music person, I hung out with the music people. No, and I was a history major with a minor in English, and it's not like those people had affinity groups, you know, where they'd get together to study restoration poetry. No, it didn't happen that way. Mm-mm.
Well, the SDS chapter was on campus, I think, at that time. Were you involved in that at all? Not at all.
No, those were radicals.
Ah, okay.
Well, no. Quite a few.
They were at the extreme end of the...
Well, yes, and yet we were all so innocent. Mm. We were really innocent. And that, you know, the picture of people on the doorstep there, all that without cell phones.
I know.
Without the internet.
Nobody's saying, meet me at... Right, right.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. If I can jump in for a second. Judy, Phil said we should ask you about this, because these are posters that we found in Metcalf Hall just a few weeks ago. We think they date from the early 70s, so maybe slightly past your time here. But we're wondering if you knew of any sort of printmaking poster and silk prints... operation that was happening in Metcalf.
Not when I was there, no. Mm-mm. This must refer to Kent
yeah,
State,
so we
right?
Think it's 71.
It's post her time.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. It is beyond me.
Question would be, who lived in Metcalf Hall
in
70?
So you think this was generated in...
We found the silk screening equipment and...
Forensic... archaeology.
we should try that. We found the silk screening equipment and a stack of about 60-ish posters.
Can you fingerprint it?
And some clothes.
Wow. No, when was this found?
Literally 3 weeks ago by some students who then contacted us.
Who shouldn't have been messing around in an old closet.
Well, it's not...
Well, I don't know.
That's what archaeologists do all the time. I'm sorry, I can't help you about that.
I'll show you the others on the way out.
Mm-hmm. How would this congregation have materialized then?
There were probably signs put up all over campus and in the dining halls.
You think more than that?
It was a pretty good TomTom network.
Yes, there was a TomTom network. We had to be.
When you say TomTom, meaning, I guess, word of mouth.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or posters around the...
old-fashioned telephones.
Yeah, but what? I mean, there was one, a pay telephone in our dorm.
Which dorm were you in?
Metcalf.
You were Metcalf.
Mm-hmm.
One phone for the whole dorm.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And nobody had, you know, of course, there were no cell phones then. And the dorm mother had a telephone, but that was off limits to us.
Did you have favorite teachers or administrators?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Besides Saul, who was a jewel, and pardon me while I say something really rude, an under-fucking-appreciated professor. And he is such a Tufts loyalist, and he is used in so many ways and never really gets, in my opinion, the appreciation that he deserves. Anyway, he's first because I took his German courses and some of his ex-college courses. An English professor named Michael Fixler, who could read poetry as though it were a love letter. You know, he was just phenomenal. And my favorite history teacher, George Markopoulos, who I stayed in touch with, and the Merovingian and Carolingian kings, you know, and on and on and on. They were showmen in the very best way because they lived and breathed their subject matter, and they knew it so intently and intensely, and they were able to communicate that to students. And, of course, there was nobody on a cell phone at the back of the class,
no,
and there was no or a laptop. People were paying attention, and they took notes by hand. So it was a different pedagogical environment as well as a different learning environment.
It's a smaller college. It was more...
Yeah. It was more intimate, too.
Right. Mm-hmm. Did you feel at the time that you were in any way attending Tufts...
As a welfare student?
No. Oh, I was going to say that, but... No, you probably... Did you? I mean...
No.
I was wondering more about the fact, if you look back, did you see 68 as being... graduating in 68 is such a nexus of so many social issues coming
mm-hmm.
together,
mm-hmm.
and you're going off to law school, you're kind of a path breaker in that way. Did you see your future as, how did you see your future and your place in bringing some of the things you learned at Tufts into the world? I mean, did you see yourself as carrying that on, as continuing that?
You know, you live life forward, you only understand it backwards.
Yeah.
All I knew was that I didn't want to be a school teacher.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to have to go back to Norwalk. And my grandmother, my Italian-American grandmother, who was so proud of me, when I was going to law school, she said, I want you to come back and be a lawyer in Norwalk and become a judge. I would be so proud of you. She already was proud of me, but there was no way I was going back to Norwalk. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I didn't want to go back to that confined environment.
Yeah.
And Chicago was a very intellectually challenging place, a bigger city. I mean, they had black policemen in Chicago. I'd never seen a black policeman before in my life. They had, they had black people doing everything.
Very white.
Yes, and it's not like, and 68 to 71 was still roiling. Mm-hmm. My partner, who's at home back in California, and I entered Chicago, the law school, as the tear gas from the Democratic National Convention was still in the air. So, you know, you go from Tufts from 64 to 68, and then you go into law school from 68 to 71.
Wow.
It was exciting times.
Wow.
And
did you see yourself, was part of your destiny, did you feel, to continue advocating for people and being at the forefront of contemporary issues? And
certainly not like Tom, who said his goal, he was quoted sometimes as saying his goal was to be an outside agitator. Never my goal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I still had my blue-collar roots. I wanted to have a life and a profession and to do good and to do well. I didn't need to liberate the whole world. I didn't need to be a social worker down in Cabrini Green. I didn't need to do that. But I needed to have that kind of mindfulness about what I was doing. So when I got out of law school, I got an excellent education, but I wasn't in the top 10 of my class, you know. And I interviewed for a few law firms, and nobody hired me. So I went back to Norwalk without a job, and I took the Connecticut Bar Association.
Oh, right.
And then I got hired by the Connecticut Civil Liberties Union as their first full-time lawyer.
Wow.
And paid, I don't know, $15,000 a year, and I thought I was rich.
Rich,
yes. And then I worked for them for a year and a half. Then I worked for the ACLU in the Reproductive Freedom Project. The abortion decision had just come down. So I did Fathers in the Delivery Room and abortion rights and things like that. I did a Connecticut case. Anyway, and then after that, I went to Yale Law School and taught in the clinical program there for 2 years. And that's, I had met John Bach, the Quaker chaplain, while I was working for the ACLU. When I was at Yale Law School teaching law babies how to be real lawyers, we took them to the federal prison where prisoners who wanted to speak to a law student had signed up in advance. So every week we'd come in and they'd give us a list of the prisoners who had signed up. Gordon Liddy was there then.
Oh, Jesus.
And he, you may know, he's a former FBI agent, former district attorney for Dutchess County, prosecuted Timothy Leary for LSD. Anyway, Gordon was known as a jailhouse lawyer. So all the prisoners who really wanted the inside take had been to him already to talk about their cases. So when we came into the waiting room with the law baby here and me as the supervisor, Gordon Liddy was already there. And he had a list, the same list I did, of the people we were going to see. And he'd come to me. He was a charming guy. He's still alive, I believe. And he'd have the same list. And we'd compare lists. And he'd say, now, Andrews has a very interesting double jeopardy question. You know, Rodriguez, he just wants to whine. You can ignore him. Peterson, you know, he may have a role with a chance with the parole board. And he was always right.
Wow. Interesting people you've met in your life.
Yeah, right.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And you know who Gordon Liddy's best friends were in the joint? The mafia guys. And you know why? Because they had the same philosophy of life. Never complain, never explain. You know?
Well, speaking of advice, just a lot of young people come to Tufts very aspirational and
yeah, I'm sure.
Civic service in their minds and hearts. And any advice you'd give young people today who want to seize opportunities here at Tufts and make the world better through whatever channels they can?
Know yourself. Know yourself, and then you can know what you can do for others and what your motivation is for trying to help people. You know, it's just important to be aware of your own prejudices, your own weaknesses, your own strengths before you offer them to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that self-knowing is often hard to get.
Why is that so important, you think?
I guess it is because you want to make sure you are doing the right thing out of the right motive.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to make sure also that when you're offering to help somebody, you're doing it from a place of empathy and as much understanding as you can, rather than, I'm here to help you, little person. You know, the little people smell that immediately.
Mm-hmm. Resent that.
Yeah, they do. They do.
Mm-hmm. And that's guided you?
Oh, I don't know. I began to know who I was at Tufts, and law school helped me with that too. But it's more looking back on it now, and having been a lawyer for so many years, and now a volunteer lawyer, And, you know, it helps.
How would you, if just to capsulize, when you say you began to know who you were at Tufts, who was that woman? What was, how would you describe her? I mean, I don't think you were the rabble-rouser that Tom, you know,
No, I didn't have that kind of self-confidence either.
More of a, how would you describe?
I knew that by the time I graduated from Tufts, I knew that I was really smart and that I could work really hard and that I wrote really well. And that if I put my mind to something, I could get it done. And those are the things that, you know, enabled me to go to law school.
So confidence and...
Yes, confidence. Yes, really, confidence has a lot to do with it. And I wasn't a very attractive person. I was really overweight in high school. I was overweight most of the time at Tufts. In my senior year, knowing I was going to make this big jump, I lost a lot of weight. I began to feel like I could own who I was and go forward with it. So Tufts really grew me up. That's one of the lines in the little, have you seen the alumni book of my class?
I've got to see that. I think that just is available now, right?
Yes, yeah.
I'll get one.
I have my copy.
Yeah, so
because
is that something you brought out to the fore?
Well, this is, they just gave us this, and it's incomplete. But if you, here it is.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll get one from
Dan. Yeah, you will.
Dan. Okay.
So, Tufts helped me to grow up. And a Tufts alumnus.
Oh, there it is. Arranged for me to get a scholarship to University of Chicago Law School.
Mm-hmm.
The rest is history, and I'm one lucky lady.
I am.
Thank you very, very
You're
much.
Welcome. I'm sorry I couldn't
we didn't
tell
get
you more about that.